Before I try to answer that question, and I'm not sure I can answer that question, let me now talk a little bit more about how this settlement emerges. When we get to the 9th century, we have very scanty evidence during the reign of Charlemagne and his successor, Louis the Pious, from the 9th century, where they seem to want to, they hear about these Jewish traders and they want to attract them to settle in their fiefdoms, in their areas of land which they control. So that we hear in northern France and in Germany and that whole region, individual Jewish families being invited by a feudal lord, and they sign a charter. We have three imperial charters which are extant from the time of Louis the Pious, for example, promising individual Jews, and the names are in these charters, protection for their life and their property, and the opportunity, and here is the very key line, to live according to their own law, and even to own land. So what is going on here is very interesting. Number one, the beginning of a legal status for the Jews. One of the most interesting differences between this Christian world in relationship to its Jewish minority and the Muslim world and its Jewish minority is from the start, as we saw in the Muslim world, there is a legal status that is defined for all universally. Thimi or Dimi, right? In other words, this status of this Pact of Omar that we spoke about, defining the Jews as being monotheist within a system where they have certain rights and privileges. There is no universal definition of the legal status of Jews within the Christian world. And instead, we seem to have a kind of ad hoc development which takes place. The first legal development, therefore, the first legalization that these Jews can hang out, can stay put, are these charters. The key definition of these charters is, when you come, we will allow you to live according to your own law. That means you can do your rabbinic thing, you can celebrate your Jewish holidays, you can have your rabbis, you can have your synagogues, as long as we can get something out of you. Now, what are we going to get out of you? We're going to get out of you your fiscal skills, your economic skills. You're going to translate, in other words, your economic skills, which were mobile, into something now which is more sedentary. Again, we are speaking about a second development here of how you move from an itinerant status to a status of actually owning the land and working the land. But in this period of time, certainly before the Crusades, and certainly before the 12th and the 13th and the 14th century, when things will change radically, Jews seem to be flexible to move from one occupation to the other, including owning land, which later on you will see they are prohibited from owning. And what is quite interesting is one of the major areas that they will get into very early, and by the 11th and the 12th century they are prominent in this field, is the area of vineyards and making wine. This is a subject that has been recently studied by a number of scholars. It's a very interesting question because I can tell you already the problems that this entails. Namely, a Jew, according to the laws of keeping kosher, cannot drink wine made by Christians. So how does he create vineyards? How does he create wine without the help? I mean, these are small, little, tiny Jewish communities, without the help of Christians that are interacting with him and actually working and making and stamping on the grapes and whatever else you have to do to make wine and so on. So the issue of economic reality and the reality of the law is a very, very interesting question here, which has been, we have a lot of information both from the larger documentation, but also from Jewish law itself about the question of wine. But what is clear in this period is the flexibility by which these merchants enter into all kinds of occupations, many of them connected with what they had done previously, but also transforming themselves into farmers, basically, into vineyard keepers, into a variety of other professions. And obviously, the feudal lords want them. They desire them. They invite them. So here, of course, is another indication of the emergence of these communities. The charters also establish a precedent of Jewish dependence and alliance on royal power. In other words, what we have here is the beginning of a long development. In fact, we can chart this development. It actually begins with these early charters in the 9th century between individual Jews and the feudal lord.